But Jesse Rivera, how the hell are you doing?
Lexi Acinelli, I am so good. It's so good to see you. Dude, you look hella cute today. What's going on here?
I know this isn't for me.
What's up?
I went on a date today.
What?
We went to coffee. This is actually the first podcast you and I have done where I've been awake for more than an hour. So you're going to see the real personality that I have.
Oh, you have a personality then, huh?
Yeah. But today is all about you, Jesse. Today is T-minus 1 week until your live special filming at Punchline. How are you feeling? How are you preparing?
You know, I'm preparing by getting reps in as much as I can, but not overdoing it. Like, I don't want to overcook it, you know? And I'm preparing, like, probably the last 6 weeks, like, I think, like, 40% of the time I'm awake, my brain is thinking about the set and the placement of the jokes and the transitions between from one joke to the next, and like, how am I going to link this joke to this joke, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've done 25 before, I've done 30 before. I'm anticipating this is going to be between 30 and 40. So it's going to be the longest set I've done.
Wow. So yeah. You're showcasing your best on Sunday. Is it a cumulative of all the material that you come up with as a comedian thus far, or are you adding new material?
There's like two newer jokes that I've done here and there. Like, well, jokes that I've done from the storytelling class.
Mm-hmm.
So two of the storytelling class jokes have made their way into the set. One I've done a couple of times, and one is brand new. Like, I just performed it for the first time at the last storytelling graduation show.
Yeah.
And then I've done it in front of in front of a couple of open mic crowds, and I think I did it Thursday night when I headlined at Stony Stone's Shorebirds out in Rancho.
Mm-hmm. So I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
It's probably just like the build up to the day of is probably daunting. How do you just manage to keep it off your mind sometimes and not obsess over it?
Because, you know, I still have a job to do, right? So my job is like very, it's not like physically demanding, but mentally it's demanding, and I have to be very hyper focused on my job. So yeah, I do turn it off at times, but I do always have like a whiteboard or a notepad or some kind of idea is going to get jotted down. So like I can pick it up if I need to real quickly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So your openers, we have Johnny Taylor hosting.
Yes.
Lizzie Bowen, the lovely Lizzie Bowen, Mr. Danny Luna, and Holly McMullen.
Yes.
That's such a fun lineup.
It is so much fun. You know, when I didn't want to set the lineup until like 2 weeks before the show because I really wanted to pull, because like we planned it like 4 months ago, right?
Yeah.
And I really, Johnny was going to host from the beginning, right? But like the other comics, I wanted to pull whoever was fucking hot at that moment. Like whoever was just like on a good run or just, I wanted
to. Oh, these people have been running.
right.
Yeah.
And so then it was just like, I had to go with like Danny Luna. Like, how can you not fucking do that guy a favor and you know he's gonna come through? Like, you just know, because like I was also worried about, like, look, I will never call anybody out, but like comics are kind of flaky.
Yeah.
Like I was so,
like yesterday I had to cancel. I immediately went to myself when you said flaky. I was like, oh.
No, but I was so worried about like, oh, who can I put in these spots that are not gonna flake, right? And I knew Danny Luna, OG, there's no way he's gonna flake, right?
Oh yeah.
And then with Lizzie, like Lizzie and I, like over the summer we took a road trip to Chico, and we did like some other kind of road trip, and we bonded so hard over the Beatles, and like I just got to know like not only like who she was right there, but like the kind of fabric she was cut from, and I knew that she would not let me down.
Yeah,
you know, I think we did a sing along to the Beatles' "Don't Let Me Down" on the way home.
Don't let me down. That should be her walk up song.
Should be, right? And but then also like I did kind of get to do what I wanted to do, is just like, at the last minute pull in somebody who's just fucking smoking hot right now, and that's where we pulled Holly McMullen in,
who's
just
like smoking hot in both ways.
Who like is like, to me, like Holly is like it's a baseball analogy of like the September call-ups, when they call up the best minor leaguers at the end of the year to just showcase their talent. Like, I feel like that's what we're doing with Holly McMullen.
Yeah, her momentum has not stopped.
Yeah, so I think that and of course I'm not gonna lie, a little bit of a bringer factor, because like I know she hasn't gotten a chance to perform at the Punchline a lot, so she's gonna sell a couple of tickets just on that. People are gonna come see her, like her extended family are like, holy shit, you're pouring that punch,
you yeah know? I hope I wish I could make it. You know, I'm leaving tomorrow.
I you know, there's so many special people that I really wish would be in the room that night, and you definitely crossed my mind. I mean, about even like when I was setting the lineup, you know, I was like, there's just so I think you're a talented person, but you also have an aura and an energy about you that type of people that I love to have around me.
Aw, thank you. I feel the same way about you.
Oh, you're the
best.
I
was actually so honored that you asked me to interview you. And this is great practice for me, because I'm gonna have a radio show.
What?
At UCI. It's called Funny FM.
That is fucking great. What are you gonna do with it?
I'm gonna interview comedians. Kind of like, yeah. Uh-oh, she took the topic. No. So this is great practice. Yeah, just kind of get to know the behind the scenes of comedy, because, you know, when people are on stage, everyone's like, oh, they're always this talkative. And it's like, nah, we have so many issues, and we don't like to be funny all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and the thought just, like, whenever I messaged you and said this is the idea, like, it came to me at that moment, because, like, I knew you were in town for a short amount of time, and I definitely wanted to get you on the podcast. I didn't want to give you homework of like, let's do a top five.
Yeah.
But I also wanted it to have some kind of structure, and I knew that you could on a whim do it, you know?
Oh, thank you. You're so smart for not giving me homework. I would not have done it. I'm so daunted. I'm like, school starting again. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
So with comedy, like, you know how people say that when you like go up on stage, like, people should get the gist of who you are after a minute or so. How are you going to give people Jesse? Because this is Jesse's night. We're all here for Jesse.
You know, I think that the way I set the jokes and the flow of the show, it's very autobiographical.
Yeah.
In that it kind of opens up with kind of like what I'm doing now, like this weekend, like, the story I opened up with happened just a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to talk about everything that kind of led up to me being who I am today, like the drug addiction and the weight loss and the California soberness of it. You know, like it's all going to be, I really feel that the set is very autobiographical.
Yeah.
In the stories that I'm going to tell.
Yeah. I was hoping you'd say that, because you have so much about you that is so, like, good for storytelling. You know
what's so funny is, like, when I very first started doing stand-up, I wasn't in a place to talk about myself in that aspect yet, so I thought I was gonna be like Jerry Seinfeld and just be like observational humor, you know. But it wasn't working, you know. And then I gotta give a shout out to Ali Yeda, who at the time was doing this open mic called Invisible Disabilities, where she encouraged people to go up and talk about their invisible disabilities, such as anxiety, depression, addiction, and that, like, and she was doing it at Luna's. And so it was a room full of people who were there to tell jokes about these difficult subjects. And it was there that I was first able to talk about, like, how much I struggled with being overweight and how much I had once struggled with drug addiction. And I was able to like turn the tables on that, because like, I think like that's one of the last phases of like when you leave something of your life behind you, is that like when you could turn it and make it work for you.
Yeah.
And then now you're like the master of that. It's no longer controlling you. Exactly. Like now you have control of it.
Yeah, I know. So. I know I'm over something when I can make a full constructed joke about it and it's funny to me.
Dude, instead of
painful.
Yeah.
So when in your comedy career did you go to Luna's and do that and start kind of being vulnerable with your voice on stage?
Maybe it was about, because I started like in September, December, January. You know what? It was early because I think that I started like in September of 2018, and I think May of 2019 is when I was able to perform on Alieta's showcase at Luna's, mm-hmm. doing a set about, I think that one was about, it was about just the anxiety I would get of being in public and being so big, because it felt like everyone was just like fucking looking at me like, what, you know? And then that's what those jokes were about.
Yeah. Did you kind of realize in that room that like, oh, even though this is a show about vulnerability where we talk about hidden disabilities, no matter what room I'm in, that still exists for everybody in there, you know, like everybody has that life that they kind of hide from the public.
I think it was when I first started to, and that's such a great question, Lexi, because like it really brought me to the point where I was realizing, fuck, everyone's got a story. Like these things that I feel like I'm so ashamed of,
right?
Like everyone else is hiding, guarding, fixing something in their universe that is the same as mine, and we could kind of like build on each other's momentum to get past this.
Yeah, they need people like you that are bold enough to get on stage, talk about it.
Thank you.
For a 45 minute special, Jesse.
40, you already added to it.
Oh.
It's usually the guy that makes it a little bit bigger than it is, but you added to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I added an extra 5 minutes.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Did you ever think that you would have 40 minutes when you first started?
Fuck no. I remember when I first started, and my coworkers, like my office coworkers, were like, that's fucking crazy. You could talk up there for 3 minutes. And I come like the next day, I'm like, I did 7 minutes last night. And like, fuck, you did seven?
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. And then just like, I did 10 or I did 12. And I remember one time I was dating this girl, and this was so funny because I was like, you know how like when they post about shows, and I was like, oh, they need a headliner for like 30 minutes. And I was like, I could do 30. And she looked at me, she's like, but is it a good 30? And I was like,
she said, baby, I know you got 10 you minutes got, on you.
You got 10, you ain't got 30.
Yeah.
You got 10, but I'm doing a lot of the work for three of those.
No, but honestly, I admire people that can go on stage when they and do more time than they actually have, because that's so scary.
I can't do that.
And I think it's a good way to like garner new material and just kind of go up there and riff and figure it out on stage. That's like a whole new level of vulnerability than like, I know exactly what I'm saying because I've written it in my notebook.
See, that's something that like in my journey of like working on myself, like I'm still very like, I need to be in control of the situation. Like, so when a set veers off, like when I have to address a heckler,
because
like sometimes you just got to do it, right?
Yeah.
It's not that I'm afraid to do it, but I know exactly what I'm going to do for the next 7 minutes. And if I just spent 45 seconds fucking with you, now it messed up my whole flow.
Yeah. So is that a part of your preparation? Like even preparing for a heckler and making sure you know your material, like the back of your hand.
I think that's where the whole, you gotta read the room and you gotta not be outside getting stoned. You gotta be in the back of the room noticing the shit, like that table's hot.
Yeah, I always
that table's trouble.
Yeah,
that table looks like a lot of fun. You know, like you gotta know that, like when you get up there, like if it's a hot room and the crowd's just going off that night, like, and you're going up like deep, sometimes you can't help it. Sometimes you go up first and fuck it, you're just the sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
But like sometimes if you go up there like third or fourth, like you should already know, don't even give this table an option. Like don't even really? Fucking look
I
at them.
I love to go against the rules and be like, if there's a rowdy table, I will address them first.
Oh, look at
just
you.
Just so I can like give them their attention. Like, if, and if I'm having fun, then I'll stick with it. But also it's because I don't like to go up immediately and just go straight into my material because I feel like a robot.
Uh-huh.
I like to like play with the crowd a little bit.
Yeah.
But like you said, studying the crowd, I see Bobby Emoto every time I see him at Punchline. He's in the back of the bar just surveying everyone in the audience, and he goes up there and absolutely crushes.
Dude, Robert Emoto is one of those guys that like I hope it goes off the rails. Like I don't like I want to see him attack and just destroy.
Yes.
Like I'd rather see him do crowd work. His material's great. I fucking love his material. One of my favorite jokes is his joke about his dad ordering salmon at Denny's.
like fresh shipment daily from Alaska.
He's always, they bring the salmon out. The salmon's undercooked. He's like, Dad. You know, I love his material, but I'd rather see him just fucking throw the script out the window and just start riffing with an audience. Mm-hmm. That's so much fun. I can't do that. I admire it.
Yeah.
So much.
So you're not going to convey any Bobby Emoto heart on the stage?
No. I don't even want... The only thing that I don't want for the audience is, like, I don't want... Because, like, some of my... Like, a couple of my nieces and a couple of my cousins are coming up to the show, and it's, like, their first time seeing me. I don't want them in the front... I don't want to see them. I want the front row to just be as authentic, like, just people I've never seen before. Because when...
Yeah.
When I'm up on stage, especially at Punchline Sacramento, I can only see those first three, that first row. That's all I could physically see.
Mm-hmm.
I could hear the rest of it. If I see that one of those tables is really into it, then really the show's for them, and then the rest of it.
Yeah, like, perform for the people you could make eye contact with. Someone told me you should perform for the front row, and if they're having a good time, people in the back will see that, and they want to be a part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So then they laugh. But exactly. Yeah, I remember... I did a roast battle at Jam in the Van, and I got on stage, and I see I took Dakota and Josh with me, and they were in the front row.
Yeah, did that like, suck?
Yes.
It does, right?
they were like, oh, we just wanted to sit in the front. And I was like, but we did not talk about this. Like, I came out and they were just...
I feel Dakota and Josh Means?
Josh Davis.
Oh, okay, Josh Davis, fine. Because I was going to say, I feel Josh Means should have known better. Okay. I let it slide with those two cats. Yeah.
With those two cats?
Yeah, I let it slide with them. Funny. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that was really funny, because every time someone would say like a really good joke, I would just look at them and be like, uh-oh. Like, what's going on?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I remember one of the judges made a really weird comment. He was like, can I vote for her titties? And there were four judges, and I lost that battle, and there were two votes for the other guy.
Uh-huh.
So when he said, can I vote for her titties? I said, does that mean I get two votes?
I was going to say, yeah, does he get one vote or two?
Yeah.
Like, I vote for her titties,
I remember looking at Josh Davis, and he like raised his eyebrows like, oh my God, the sexism. And I was like, you just got to deal with it.
Wow.
You just got to deal with it. But yeah, also the first time I had my parents ever watch me do comedy, I took them, it was at the Mothership, I was like, let's go big or go home.
Fuck yeah. casual name drop over here, Alexi.
Yeah. Well, because I don't know, I don't want to show them my set, mostly because it's all about them.
Yeah.
And there's like things that they don't know about me that I talk about a lot, and it's more vulnerable. But roast battle is like, I'm just making this person the target of the joke, and it's all for fun. And yeah. But sat in like the front, and I think they were sat there. They didn't intentionally sit there. But when my name got called, they were like, yeah. And then I could tell where they were in the room, and I was like, oh God. And then the host pointed it out, and I was like, I just brought my mom and dad when I had like seven people.
Yeah. When I know that people are going to be in the audience, I try to not look for them. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to see them. I don't want to. And I think like strategically, well, I got to come out and look at the room, but
yeah.
I don't want to look. I don't want to spot people and be like, oh, there's my niece right there.
Do you think you'll like unintentionally spot maybe your family members just by recognizing their laugh?
Oh,
and kind of knowing where they are in the room.
That's so funny. I didn't think about that.
Does anybody have a...
Oh, man, now I'm worried about it. Shit. Fuck.
Well, I just thought of this.
I'm going to start texting people. Don't fucking laugh.
Yeah. hold your breath.
Hold your laugh. Don't do that stupid laugh of yours.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't laugh at my jokes.
Don't do your stupid laugh.
Trying to have a good time up there.
Have you been at Punchline when the girl with the squeaky laugh is in the audience?
Yes, and they always put her right to the left side of the stage. Like, they know.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think I'm going to tell them, don't let her in.
Don't let her in?
No, I'm going to tell them, send her to the fucking Ben Rice has a show that night.
You can have her hang out with the pups here. No, she's a great squeaky toy.
I'm going to tell them, go to the Cutthroat Comedy is going on at the same time as my show.
Oh, okay.
Like, send her to Cutthroat Comedy. Yeah. You can still hear her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the main room.
Yeah, she's a great person, though. We're just teasing.
Oh, really? Do you know her? You've talked with her?
No, I just said that as a disclaimer. In case somebody's like, God, they sure were mean to that girl.
No, she is a great person. She supports local comedy. She's always there. We know when she's there.
Yep.
That's awesome. All right. Well, Jesse, this is when... This is when I burnt out of my questions in my head.
That's fine, because we knew you had a small tank of gas for this. So
yeah.
We prepared some questions for you to ask me.
Oh, are we going? Should we go to the questions, the five questions?
Yeah, well, we could do that, or we could talk a little bit more, whatever. And sometimes the five questions lead to additional questions.
Yeah, I think they will.
Yeah, so I think so too. Let's do that. I'm not scared.
Especially with who or what inspires you.
Oh, fuck. Are we starting? Was there Kleenex? I'm going to cry. No, I'll just fucking cry like the Indian in that commercial. I'll let it flow.
Okay.
I'm ready. Yeah. What's up? You good?
Tissues and.
No, we're good. We don't need that. I'm fine. I'll use the dog.
Okay. Yeah. The poor lady bird. Okay, Jesse.
Yep.
Who or what inspires you? Scene. action. Not scene.
You know what, man? I became an uncle when I was 7 years old.
And I became a Mexican.
I'm Mexican. I became an uncle when I was 7 years old, and so I have, I lost count, like 15 nephews and nieces.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have like 17 great nephews and nieces.
Aww.
And it's they're like the reason I even got sober, like that I got off meth, like it wasn't, I mean, like, you know, my mom tried and my brothers tried and, you know, my friends tried, but it wasn't until like I saw that I was no longer leading a life that my oldest nephews and nieces were looking up to,
mm-hmm.
that I was like, no, dude, I need their love in my life, and I need to fix my shit just so I can continue to be like someone that they look up to, you know? And so my nephews and nieces, like for the last 30, how long have I been sober? It hasn't been 30 years, like 2005 when I quit meth, and then
2018.
Yeah, so
it 19 last, years now. Yeah, it's 2024. So like
the last 19 years that is that they were the first turn in the path to like just living a longer life to be around to watch them. And now those nephews and nieces have kids.
Aww.
And so like just like being like, cuz like if had I continued down the path I was on, like I wouldn't even, I would have definitely lost my nephews and nieces, and I would have never known my
their
great
children.
Nephews and nieces.
Yeah.
And like, I wouldn't have had moments where like this 2 weeks ago when I went home for Christmas, I picked up two of my nephews, great nephews, like now, and we went record shopping. We went to a record store and like,
oh, I saw that on your Instagram.
Yeah, to be in there with fucking these little teenagers and like, one of them's buying oldies and another one's buying fucking like, you know, it's so funny. We got back in the car and my nephew who was like the oldest, he's like the 15 year old. He was like, you know a lot about music, but you don't know anything about hip hop. And I was like, how dare you?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know anything about modern hip hop. And he was like, okay, yeah, you're right. He like, let me have that.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah,
it's my nephews and nieces that inspire me.
Aww. Jesse, that was so beautiful. I had a question. Are you gonna turn up for your 21st year of sobriety?
Probably not.
I was like, you better smoke a joint at least.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
21.
Yeah, because you're gonna turn 20 this year.
Yeah, my sobriety is gonna turn 20
yeah.
this year. So next, yeah, we'll work on that. Maybe you can help me plan it.
I would love to.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Next question is, what's your
currently binging?
Binging. Yeah, you wrote it. Sorry.
Yeah, my handwriting. I knew that's my handwriting. I was going to tell you beforehand. Read these. Make sure you could read them.
Okay.
What I'm currently binging. The roommate and I just binged Reservation Dogs. I don't know if you've seen Reservation Dogs on Hulu.
But I haven't.
We just binged. There's only 3 seasons, and the episodes are 30 minutes long. So we binged it in like probably took us 3 weeks. But wow. It probably took us 1 week per season. And so that's what I just finished binging.
Are there a lot of dogs in that show? Or It's just in the title.
There's a couple of dogs, yeah. Aww. Stop talking about plastic. It's an inside joke. So we just finished binging Reservation Dogs, and I think we're kind of like cleansing the palate right now and not really binging anything, but kind of like I'm kind of catching up on podcasts and stuff that I missed because I was binging Reservation Dogs.
Oh, so, what podcasts do you like to listen to?
Oh, dude, I listen. So I love, like, I subscribe to Marc Maron. He's got to have the right guest, and sometimes I got to skip past his opening monologue because he's a bit much for me sometimes.
Yeah,
he's just a bit too much grumpy old man sometimes. But that's also why we love Maron.
That's what I'm seeing in a lot of the greats.
Yeah,
like Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Marc Maron. Maybe they all seem a little grumpy when they're on stage. They're a little angry at the world.
Yeah. Well, they've fucking watched like 30. Well, you know what, man? They've watched.
Chris Rock got slapped.
but they've also watched like society not only stay stagnant, but also kind of like take a couple of steps backwards. You know?
Yeah.
And so it's got to be frustrating because like comics like spend their lives like making jokes about the world around them, and it's like you could probably vouch for this. Like we make these jokes in the hope that like we're gonna help bring a little bit of joy and a little bit of laughter to the world, and we do for that moment, but then like, you know, the next day, like the world is not only the same, but like in some instances we're worse off than we were 30 years ago, and that's gotta be fucking frustrating.
Why do you think it is that way? Is it social media?
Oh, dude, I've always said that social media was great up until they gave us the ability to leave comments. Like social media was great.
I've only known that social media, right?
So yeah. Not social media, but like the internet. Like the internet.
Yeah.
Even Facebook wasn't all, you couldn't always leave a comment.
Like, really?
When Facebook first started, if I wanted to tell you something, I had to send you a message and say it not face to face, but it was like only between
Facebook
me and
to
you.
Facebook. Right. Yeah.
But once you were able to just leave a comment and walk away and not have to deal with the circumstances of what you were about to say, then that's when it just started to go downhill, you know? Like, once you could say what you had on your mind without the fear of getting punched in the face, that's when people just started becoming unhinged.
That's true. And I think that people are so unhinged on the internet because there's no real consequences.
There's no consequences.
But then everybody loves to police real life, which is like, why comedy is kind of stressful to do, because you're like, am I gonna get in trouble for like trying to make this funny? Even like approaching certain topics can be daunting, because you're like,
with what you're saying being said, that's where I will go to bat for like Chappelle and the other comics who refuse to allow their shows to be recorded, right? Mm-hmm. Like with the whole no phone policy, and I'm gonna piggyback that on the back of like, you got to read the room. And I think that I am absolutely opposed to any type of censorship whatsoever. You can say whatever the fuck you want, but it's got to be funny, not just to you, like it's got to be funny to the crowd you're in.
Yeah.
And you and I both know, like, just locally, there's jokes we can tell in Placerville that we better not fucking tell in Midtown. Or there's jokes you can tell in Midtown that no one's going to laugh at you in some of the outlying parts, you know? So
me, when I say that I'm a feminist in one of my bits.
So when people, like, so when every once in a while, when you don't ever really see like the Dave Chappelle's and the Marc Maron's and the Chris Rock's crying about being censored, because they can say whatever the fuck they want to say because they know how to say it in a funny way, and
they know
where to say it. Yeah,
but also, you know, I feel like Dave Chappelle kind of focuses on some topics where it's like, why are you going so much into this?
He does. He does like to pick at the scab, but yeah. he's earned it. He does.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I feel like people don't really give comedians the time. People don't have that same attention span where it's like, yeah, of course, when they start a bit, it's going to be a little confusing and you might disagree with what Dave Chappelle is saying. But I'm like, he's taking that somewhere. Like, you're going to be taken on a journey and it's going to reshape how you think the world. And like, he's not saying that as a fact. He's saying that because it's funny.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of like a joke that he said where it's set up and you're like, uh-oh, this is not going to go in a good place. And then it does.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. When I can do that.
Yeah. I think it's different too in a live audience than when you like post it on TikTok. Everyone will be like, this sucks. Like, how is everybody enjoying this?
It's out of context. Yeah. It's out of context. And like something may have even been like that night may have like, there's just so many variables to like what is funny in that room that night, you know? And so, and it shouldn't translate to TikTok and it shouldn't translate to social media because it was funny in that moment.
Yeah. But, and it's hard because that's the only way, I guess that's the main way now to advertise yourself as a comedian and kind of quote unquote make it, is you have to post social media videos. Yeah.
But you know, also like a flip side to that coin, I've seen comics that kind of like become huge on social media and then they get stuck to only that type of material, and so they get so big on social media that there's such a demand for their content that they're just churning out content to churn it out, and it's not even funny anymore. They're just doing it because they got to post something today.
How do you feel about the Matt Rife scrutiny?
I wish him luck. I don't know the guy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like. I didn't. He's not.
Did you see the special?
No. Okay. I'd rather watch reruns of Reservation Dogs. Nothing to diss Matt Rife. It's just not in my universe, you know?
Yeah.
So
he started off with a domestic violence joke.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. Yeah, that joke was horrible.
It was horrible.
Yeah. But, you know, but then
it was one of those, like, yeah, we heard it before. Yeah. Like, we've been saying that since the
30s. Yeah, was that your Matt Rife voice? You kind of did a Matt Rife voice there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I did that so intentionally. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I actually I made a domestic abuse joke. This is something that I'm kind of afraid of with roast battle.
Mm.
Because I think roast battle really shows like your skills as a writer. And whenever I'm doing roasts, I don't try to be like mean. I'm trying to be like super clever.
Yeah.
And I made this joke where I said that this girl, I was like, she was in an abusive relationship for 4 years. So she's not fat, just really swollen.
Oh.
And it went really well, like in the room. And then it got posted on TikTok.
And it's bad, right?
Everyone was like, how could Matt Rife make a joke about abuse? And this girl can do this. And I was like, I'm so sorry, but I'm honestly honored you're comparing me to Matt Rife right now. Like,
all I heard was...
Yeah. I was like,
but that night in that room, that joke was fucking hot.
And it was hot, and I thought it was funny. She thought it was funny. She told me that information. You know, we're both vulnerable in our own ways. We're having fun with it. Yeah. And I feel like people don't really understand that community, especially now with cancel culture. So I'm scared for like, or maybe concerned with future jobs.
I like concerned as a better than scared.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just like watchful of it.
Yeah.
Cause I don't want anything to be taken out of context. And like, if you search up my name, like that's the first thing that comes
up.
But
then also, man, like if we're worried about the content we're putting out, then like Ice-T said, you're putting cut on the product and you should never put cut in the product. You know, like I don't ever want to be afraid. Like, so that's a fine line we got to walk, right? It's fucked up that social media is doing that to us.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I'm ready for the next question.
Okay. What are you afraid of?
Fuck.
Besides social media comments.
You know, I'm afraid of
doing too damn good of a job at Punchline this Sunday at 7 p.m.
You know what I'm afraid of? I mentioned it to Johnny Taylor last night. I'm afraid of, you know, I was an addict. I still have an addictive personality. I suffer from extreme highs and extreme lows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about the come down after the show.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm worried about the now what.
Yeah.
You know, I'm worried about Monday morning and like my ears still ringing and like, you know, luckily I have the day off the day after, so it'll
that's be good.
Helpful to like be hanging out with somebody that I know cares about me and that yeah. I know that we like help each other. So it's going to be.
Yeah. Text me after the show.
I'm afraid. I will. I'm afraid of the come down after
wow, the show. Wow. That's something I didn't really like consider.
Yeah. I'm afraid of slipping into a depression after the show, but
do you have goals for 2024? Because you're starting off hot in January. Well,
so 2024 is going, like, I'm still going to do stand-up. I'm still doing stand-up, writing jokes and all that. But 2024 is going to be about doing research, taking notes, and putting together a book that I want to write.
Oh, my goodness.
And then start writing the book in 2025 and then have the book done in 2026.
Okay. So maybe you, like, the day after, you make some bullet points for the book and you're like, I'm flowing.
Yeah. So that's what 2024 is about.
Yeah. Well, dang. Oh, shoot. Okay.
What's the next question? Death next row meal?
Question. Yep. Last meal on death row.
You know what the fucking perfect meal is right now? To me, the perfect meal right now, In-N-Out Burger, Flying Dutchman, grilled onion wrapped, mustard grilled. So they do the Flying Dutchman, but they put mustard on the hamburger patty before they grill it, and then so it's got the two pieces of meat, pieces of cheese, and then on top it's got grilled onion, on the bottom it's got grilled onion.
How can you taste that they put the mustard on the bun before
you
they put
it? You can taste it. I promise you, you can taste
you
it.
You can taste it.
You can taste the
That's
mustard.
That's crazy. You know what's so funny is I think the first time you asked me my death row meal, I said In-N-Out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and then we talked about ranch for like 10 minutes.
We're like, what about the one you make at home? I remember talking about like, you made it at home?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homestyle ranch.
With cheese fries with extra cheese.
Oh, I love cheese fries.
That's the perfect meal.
But
right
you have
now.
To eat them first.
Yeah, exactly, because you can't
they get really congealed. Okay, well, I hope you can get in and out after your show.
That would be dope. That'd
be dope because it's so close to Punchline. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a death row meal.
You know what I kind of want after the show is I kind of want after the show, like, depending on who wants to hang out, go to Mel's on Jay and just get a cup of coffee and some breakfast and just kind of hang out and like fucking decompress or decompose. What's that word? Decompress.
Yeah. That'd be lovely.
Yeah. And of course, like a joint on the way there.
Yeah. On the way and after.
Yeah.
And while we're waiting for our food.
Right.
Okay. Last question is, what is next for Jesse Rivera?
I think I inadvertently answered that question, right?
Let's talk more about your book.
Oh.
What is it, comedy related?
So the book is going to be, the working title is like A Year of Faded Memories.
Yeah.
So I've like, this all started when I have like this stack of concert ticket stubs. And it all started when like I started like looking at the concert ticket stubs one day, and let's just say that like July 27th, 1996, the Rose Bowl, California, the Eagles with Sheryl Crow opening. Like, I want to do like the book is going to be one year long, January 1, January 2nd, January 3rd, right? A year worth of memories that happened on that day, but different years, of course. Like,
yeah,
January 1, and that's going to encompass these faded memories that I'm trying to hold on to. That's why I want to put them into a book.
Oh, cute.
Of like, oh, on this day, on this day, 1996, I was at this concert. On this day, 2015, I did my first open mic. On this day, 2021.
So the years are going to be different, but the day, chronologically the day.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really cool idea.
A year of faded memories, and how I'm going to do it.
Yeah, you said a year of faded memories, and I was like, it's just blank pages. Yeah.
And how I'm going to do it is like in 2024, I'm going to cue all the memories together, right? And then in 2025, like starting January 1, I'm going to post them on my Instagram stories, like one day at a time.
Oh, wow.
And then what, like the wording or the whatever from the Instagram story, I'll just take that and put it onto the paper when it's time to turn it into a book.
Yeah.
That's the concept behind it.
Every day, like this year, you could even like just like, oh, the today is what, January 7th? Like yeah, what like happened on January? Like what do I want to use for January 7th?
Yeah, I already have a document going.
Oh, the I already puppy have a fell.
I caught her.
That was so cute.
Yeah, I already have a document going with a couple of random dates and events. So,
do you have like a top three, like life moments that you want to include in the book?
I'll do one of them. Is definitely I remember I was like 12 years old when I was watching Michael Jackson perform on the Motown 25th anniversary special. And that was when the epic moment of when Michael Jackson did the moonwalk on national television.
Wow.
And I promise you, Lexi, the next day at school, the world was different. Everybody was moonwalking. Everybody was breakdancing. And it changed.
We need like a reset like that.
I can also remember a night when we were working at a record store and we were all waiting for the new Tupac All Eyes on Me to come out because it was the first album he was releasing post-prison. Now it's on death row. We hadn't even heard these songs before.
Yeah.
A guy that worked for Interscope Records calls the store. He's like, I'm going to drop off a copy to you guys. The store closed. He dropped off the copy. We went out back. We smoked a joint. And then we cleaned the store for an hour and a half listening to the new Tupac record that we'd never heard before. And
so
it just blew our minds.
Don't ever say Jesse doesn't know anything about hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah. Modern hip-hop, I don't know shit.
Yeah.
Like the 80s, 90s, no, I know my shit.
Yeah. That might inspire me to, like, you know, not write a book, but kind of do the same thing because I'm really bad at preserving memories.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's going to get worse as you get older. Yeah. So, yeah, do something about it now.
I, like, barely remember my childhood. Which is, like, hard because, like, when you think of, like, for bits and stuff, do you ever try to, like, pull from your own life and you're just, like, what did I do?
yeah, I do. And then I don't give it too much thought. I'll just make something up and move on. Like, you know, like if I'm trying to do a bit and I'm like, oh, was that? And here or there, I'll just make that part up and I'll just move along.
Something that I'm really mad about is like I've already created the habit of going on my phone so often. So I feel like I'm missing out on just being in the world because I'm on my phone.
Yeah, work on that.
And then thank you.
Work on that. Yeah.
Jesse, it's bad.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's bad. Do you want to know my screen time? Should I pull it up right now? Do you want to guess?
I'm guessing you probably 14 hours a day.
Okay. 5 hours.
What's today?
Today is
That's not bad. You average 5 hours of screen time a day?
Yeah, but it said it went down 34% from last week.
Oh, because it's only counting today. Like, the week starts today.
Uh-oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Yeah, oh my god, I played Tetris for an hour yesterday. Do you know I started playing Tetris?
It's addicting.
2 days ago.
The music.
Within a day, I got to a level 100.
Yeah.
I don't listen to the music. I put like a podcast on.
Oh my god, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, maybe it sounds more addicting though if I had the music on.
Yeah,
because I already like am driving and I just like picture like Tetris blocks getting paired together.
So you believe like
I'm like weaving through them.
Oh gosh.
But yeah, if I had the music in my head too, I'd just be all over the place.
Lexi, we gotta wrap this up.
Okay.
Sorry,
I got so stressed.
No, that was the last question.
Jesse, I'm calling the shots here. Okay.
Okay.
No,
sorry.
Jesse, we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you.
Letting me do this podcast with you.
Thank it's you for having me on.
Third time I've been on this podcast. Such an honor. So much fun every time. So fun talking with you, and I'm so excited for your special this Sunday, January 14th at 7 p.m. We got Johnny Taylor, Lizzie Bowen, Danny Luna, Holly McMullen, and your headliner, the one and only Jesse Rivera.
Thank you, Lexi. It's been such a pleasure being your friend and getting to know you, and I look forward to many, many, many more times and projects that we're going to work on.
Aw, me too.
All right.
All right, that's a wrap. Thank you guys for listening.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.